Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
If it comes down to facing suffering in a world where there is no hope, that death really does rob us of any ultimate hope, and where suffering gets the last word, and where there's no ultimate meaning to our suffering, it's meant to be avoided in order to maximize pleasure and minimize pain, well then I would much rather suffer with Jesus than suffer without him.
At the end of the day, I have to push on and lean into the duty that I've taken on. That if I can, you know, kind of contribute to alleviating that suffering, then that to me is, that means a lot to me. That sense comes from something greater than me.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Hello, welcome back to a really heartfelt discussion today between my guests Dan Patterson and Dean Mays on whether the story of Christianity could be true and Dean's own experience as a nurse in intensive care. This is the first proper discussion show for Unbelievable for 2022, and we've lots of exciting things planned for you this year. Look out for the launch very soon of a new mini site bringing together all of our current podcasts, video shows and resources from Premier Unbelievable. That includes things like Ask NT Wright Anything, the C.S. Lewis podcast, and other shows. And thanks for the tremendous number of suggestions for show topics that have come in over the new year period. All those who have entered our survey as well for what you'd like to see on the next series of The Big Conversation. We'll be trying to look as many of those as possible and put as many in the melting pot, the thinking hat, whatever metaphor you want to use. Your feedback coming up as well later on the show. Some of you have been responding to recent programs, including that broadcast of a lecture by Tom Holland that we put out on the show last week. For more from the show, for our newsletter, for ways to support us in 2022, you can still find us over at our webpage, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. For now, let's get into today's show. Today on the show, we're asking, could the story of Christianity really be true? Two Aussies join me today. Dan Patterson is the founder of Questioning Christianity, a ministry connecting the Christian story to life's deepest questions. Dean Mays is a nurse working in an intensive care unit and the author of several acclaimed novels. Now, Dan's new book, Questioning Christianity, explores the nature and relevance of the Christian story to the world today. Dean is a show listener who's been drawn into a journey exploring God, faith and philosophy in recent years. And he'll be bringing his questions about Christianity to the conversation as we ask whether the story of Christianity can make sense of our story. So Dan and Dean, welcome along to the show. Great to have you both joining me from across the pond. Well, more than across the pond, across the whole globe, really, is what we're talking about when it comes to you guys. Dan, tell us a bit about your story. First time on the show, but I know that you've been connected with Unbelievable for some time, and you kindly had me on your show recently. Tell us a bit about your own journey of faith and this new book, Questioning Christianity.
Yeah, I would love to. And thanks for having us on, Justin. It's a real honour and really looking forward to chatting to Dean. I grew up here in Australia. I was born down in Melbourne and lived pretty happy young life for the most part. Mum and Dad were great, took us along to church as a youngster. They're both followers of Jesus and probably gave me a very practical understanding of what love looks like. Never really talked all that much about God, or particularly not trying to wrestle with much of the hard things in the world, but certainly they lived what they believed in, caring for people that were drug affected or foster kids and and the like. And it wasn't really until I was a little bit older that my questions about God really began. Are we all nine when we had a big car accident on a family holiday that left my mum pretty seriously brain damaged from headbutting a truck at high speed? And so Dean would be familiar with the kind of trauma that comes into the ICU after that. So my mum had to have a third of her skull removed for the sort of pressure in her brain to be able to not grow to the point where she would die from intracranial pressure and just significant injuries. And so the sort of post-op with the surgeon talking to my dad was that that was going to be a real life-changing event. This was significant trauma and she was likely going to have extensive brain damage. And so I spent my late childhood and then teenage years really having to wrestle with whether or not I could believe in a God who would let that sort of bad thing happen. I guess my childlike belief in God was shattered by that roadside. And I kind of left the God question mostly at kind of arm's length for all of that time until I finished up at school and started asking, man, what am I going to do with my life? I probably had a sense of life's fragility given what my family had been through. And so wondered maybe a little bit more deeply or philosophically than many of my other sort of agnostic or apatheistic sort of schoolmates. And so it took maybe 6 to 9 months of me just questioning, what are we doing here? What's life about? That a friend of mine that I was working with at the time put a Bible in my hands. And as a Christian, he said, you should see whether or not this story has any answers to the questions that you're asking. And I didn't realize at that point when a Christian says, read the Bible, they usually mean a specific part of the Bible that might help to answer some of these questions. For me, kind of wandering through it raised more questions than it really addressed. But it was in reading the stories about Jesus that I did find so much of, I guess, the response that I was looking for. I saw something that was real and credible and compelling in the life of Jesus, both in speaking to suffering and themes of hope, but also in sort of reconnecting us for what we're here for a relationship with God, to love him and to love others and to commit to gardening and governing God's good world. And so I was kind of compelled around my 18th birthday. That was a big kind of watershed. And after coming to Christ, though, I still had a ton of questions. I sort of had this spiritual awakening, but my mind took a while to catch up. And so confused and asking a whole lot of questions of my youth pastor at the church I started going to, he encouraged me to read, gave me a reading list of some 50 books to start pulling apart. And it was in the process of trying to make sense of the faith myself, I realized, man, there are probably a ton of other people that have the kind of questions that I do, or the kind of barriers to being able to accept or believe this or make sense of it that I might. And so I just started doing a little bit of speaking to friends, conversations, or at a local high school with my youth pastor doing some talks or youth group. And it kind of just ballooned from there. So I spent some 15, 16 years now in some somewhat public ministry as a pastor, and then working, kind of doing this in schools and universities around the world. So the book Questioning Christianity has really just grown out of that, that in doing a whole lot of Q&As over time and really taking people's questions seriously, I recognize that some people have a big barrier to being able to understand what Christianity is, that it's been misbroadcasted throughout its history and by the Christians in their lives, so that what they think Christianity is doesn't match at all what's painted throughout the Christian story or represented best in the life of Jesus. But also then to take some time, having spelled out how the story speaks to these questions of life, also how to address those key barriers and doubts that that many people have as they journey along through faith. And so that was the heartbeat of the book, to produce something helpful for people everywhere. I wrote it with my friend Rian. It was his idea, and so he deserves all the credit on that front. But hopefully it'll just be a great way for people to reimagine, I guess, or to explore for the first time what Christianity really is.
It's a really helpful, I found, sort of kind of book that you could give to someone who's asking questions, who may be somewhat familiar, maybe not familiar with Christianity, but it's a great intro level way of speaking to someone that way. There's a link with today's show for anyone who wants to check it out. Questioning Christianity, Is There More to the Story? Dan Patterson and Rian Roo, is it the surname of Rian?
Yeah, he's South African, so right on, Rian Roo.
Great. Check out the links for that. My other guest today is Dean. Dean's actually been on the show a couple of years ago for a Christmas edition of the show, but it's that was pre-pandemic, wasn't it, Dean? And a lot's happened since then. Tell us about life, because you work obviously in medicine, healthcare, and so on. What's the last couple of years been like for you, Dean?
In a word, chaotic. We seem to have been learning on the fly pretty much for the last 2 years, ever since. I think my awareness of the seriousness of all this happened in about April of 2020, when we started receiving the first serious memos about the seriousness of COVID. And ever since then, we've grappled with, ever-changing policy around the management of COVID. And the hospital where I work at, we specialise in a few key areas, which put us in the box seat to actually take the pressure off our other hospitals in the system to try and alleviate some of the roadblocks that were happening at the time. So
it's been a crazy year. I mean, every country's had its different sort of ways of responding. Where would you say Australia feels just at the time we're recording? Obviously, it's a constantly evolving situation, but what's the general feeling about, you know, where the pandemic is at right now?
Well, look, it's hard to know. I mean, Dan's situation up in Queensland is probably different to my situation here in South Australia. So, I mean, you know, the feeling I get from what I've seen of Queensland is that they're opening up with some caveats. South Australia opened up back in late November, and ever since then, it's been a constant resetting of guidelines from our health authorities as to how to act. We've seen people go back into lockdown because they've been exposed to the Omicron variant. I would have to say that it's more chaotic here in South Australia at the moment than what it has been in other parts of the country. So,
right.
So it's really hard to predict, Justin.
Well, bless you and all the workers who have been, just battling so hard over the last couple of years. I know how much it takes, what the toll it takes above and beyond, the usual kind of calls of duty that you guys have. But, tell us, just remind us a bit of your own background here, Dean. I was tempted to call you an agnostic in my introduction, but I wasn't sure if that was quite the label. And you said, I'm not sure what I call myself anyway, Justin. But tell us sort of what your journey has taken you on and how you bumped into Unbelievable. And just briefly, what kind of questions that began to raise for you along the way.
Yeah, sure. So like Dan, I grew up in Victoria, in country Victoria as opposed to the city. Fairly simple upbringing. It wasn't an especially Christian upbringing, although I had a certain awareness of Christianity, mainly through my grandparents, who attended church regularly. I think probably the first big ground shift on how I approach Christianity occurred when my brother was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease when he was 4 years old, back in the early 80s. And I was only young myself at the time, so I guess I saw the reaction of to Christianity through my parents, who were obviously going through a fairly brutal time of it, having to face the fact that their youngest son had been diagnosed with cancer. And so Christianity probably fell away for us as a result. There was a lot of anger, there was a lot of resentment. There wasn't a lot known about that particular form of cancer at the time, so there was a certain stigma attached to us, our family, by the community that we lived in at the time, and some of that came from supposedly Christian people. So that coloured my view, which I carried pretty much all through my teenage years. When I was about 15, I myself was diagnosed with a rare form of spinal cord tumour, which put me through my own experience of health challenge, and it further alienated me from, I guess, the story, the Christian message, the gospel message. So I carried a lot of anger for a lot of years as a result of that. In my, I guess, late 30s, early 40s, you know, we're talking in the last probably 10 years, for some reason, the antipathy that I had towards Christianity began to kind of break down. And I don't really know why, but I think it was part of a broader change in myself, in that the world that I saw around me just didn't seem to work the way it did before. And so I started exploring different people that essentially would have disagreed with 10 years ago, but for some reason I found myself gravitating towards them just to listen to what they had to say. Mm-hmm. And that sort of ran into my discovery of Unbelievable and you, Justin, because you had a conversation with Jordan Peterson. And I can't for the life of me remember the other guest. It was Susan somebody.
Susan Blackmore.
That's right, Susan Blackmore. And so I came to Unbelievable for the Jordan Peterson conversation, but I stayed on for the Justin Briley conversation. And just slowly, I described myself in one of my first interactions with you as a curious theologian. So it's fair to say that, yeah, I'm not agnostic anymore. I'm rather curious towards theology, Christianity, and philosophy. Whereas, before I would have just written it off and held my hand up to it. I don't do that anymore, and I actually find the whole notion of putting my hand up to Christianity and spirituality kind of offensive, if you know what I mean. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just get the sense that you've opened up to other explanations, I guess, and it'd be interesting during the course of this conversation to explore how obviously your experiences in the ICU as a nurse, but also your experiences as an author, kind of trying to tell stories anyway, kind of has impacted that journey as well.
Sure.
And it's been great fun to see you engaging with some of the other shows we do, Ask NT Write Anything and things like that, Dean. I'm so glad for all the interactions we've had together as well. So I'm just looking forward to this conversation. Very, very open ended. This one, we're not. There's no winner or loser kind of debate going on in this conversation. It's very much just an open ended one. I mean, Dan, for you, you know, you've had a chance to see a little bit of Dean's journey. I think listened to that episode. You've seen some of his blogging. Do you recognize kind of Dean's story in other people's stories that you engage with and that have picked up this book?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a real sense where a first glance at Christianity, a childlike version of probably any story, really religious or secular, just isn't deep enough to make sense of the complexities and the pain and the richness and the beauty of our world. And so I like myself, hearing just some of the tragedy that you've been through, Dean, with your family, like, I completely understand the instinct to run away from belief in God or just to naturally distance yourself. It just doesn't make sense, right? A belief in a loving God who wants a wonderful plan for your life doesn't match the gruesome reality of our world often. But there's also something that comes then when you realize actually the childlike version of Christianity, that doesn't really match the contours of the Bible. And you read this literature, this complex library of documents that speaks to the human experience from the highest moments of elation all the way through to deep guttural cries of lament and frustration and anger. And that all of that is part of what's considered Holy Scripture, I just find fascinating. And so there's this almost awakening, and you're probably right that Jordan Peterson has played a part in this for a lot of people, or absolutely, even just the broader cultural shift in the conversation to what makes for a meaningful life that's happening, not just amongst Peterson, but amongst so many others. And I think people are opening up again and saying, well, maybe there's a deeper wisdom. Maybe there's a real truth. Maybe the Christian story isn't just the stereotype or the caricature that gets torn down by our adolescent selves or by those who might be outsiders. But maybe there's something worth exploring here to to see whether or not it can make sense of our life. And I, for me, have found Jesus's statement to be the light of the world. That sense that, you know, as C.S. Lewis once said, I believe in Christianity as I believe the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it, I see everything else. For me, the explanatory power of the Christian story is why I feel so drawn towards it, as well as why I can understand others, particularly people in your situation, Dean, where you see so much pain and have walked through that yourself, why you might even want it to be true and so open to exploring whether it is.
One thing I was thinking about in the lead up to our conversation was, I think it was something that Peterson said, that we're all searching for a concept of the divine. Whether that be, you know, through the Christian story. And I find it interesting that, you know, that atheists like, say, Sam Harris, for example, they're so quick to dismiss the Christian story. But I listen to a lot of Sam Harris, and he's searching for a concept of the divine himself. You know, he talks a lot about, you know, this purity of consciousness. And that to me is just another representation of the divine. So what I see within Christianity is just this, this search for and wanting to go forward towards something divine. And the older I get, the more appealing I find that notion. So does that make sense?
Yeah. How do you make sense of that kind of inbuilt drive? Do you think some people might write it off as simply a fear of death or a concern that maybe your life is whittling away to nothing? How do you make sense of that intuition to move to something deeper or bigger or that you can be caught up in?
I used to have a lot of antipathy towards that idea. But I think that humans need to have a sense of moving towards something, and I think that's very deep. It's very deep. It's very innate in who we are, and where that comes from, I think is that comes from a very deep place, and I'm willing to entertain the notion that comes from God. So, yeah.
I was going to sort of
does that answer the question?
Well, I was going to ask sort of, if you ask that question of, say, Sam Harris, you know, he might say, well, yes, it comes from a very deep place, but it's ultimately a place that is reducible to a kind of evolutionary story, sort of a materialist story, if you like. Jordan Peterson, I suspect, would give you a more complicated answer. I'm not sure exactly what. He'd probably say, well, it depends what you mean by something or other. But the point is, they're both looking for these kind of how to get meaning out of life. But ultimately, I feel like Peterson is kind of willing, kind of as you are, Dean, to entertain the idea that actually maybe there's some bigger thing behind it all. He seems to have been on a journey for a while talking about those kind of deeper questions about whether there is a kind of ultimate explanation, meaning, logos, if you like, behind all of, you know, existence. And I guess it sounds to me, Dean, like you're open to that explanation. I mean, call it God, for want of a better word, but do you feel like you've, moved at all in the direction of, you know, Christianity, organized religion? Has that kind of made you want to sort of explore whether that is a kind of the way in which you could encounter that reality?
Yes, I have moved towards that. I have moved towards Christianity, mainly because in the last few years I've encountered Christian people who are far and away just generally nice people, you know. And the people that I've encountered aren't dogmatic in the sense that you must, you must embrace this message. And that was the key thing that I got out of your book, Dan, was that the way that you presented your argument in questioning Christianity was more of it was more of an invitation to sit down and let's wrestle with this. And that's one of the things that I like most about sitting down with Christianity now, is that it's okay to wrestle with these things. And in fact, I think that's part of the meaning of Christianity, is that we must wrestle with these things. We can't just simply go through life and not, and I mean, we could go through life and just be superficial and just accept everything that comes our way. But I think that it's much more rewarding to wrestle with these things. And whether we find the answers to them, I don't know. But I think that the actual endeavor is just as important as arriving at answers. In fact, I don't know whether, you know, I don't know whether I want to arrive at answers, because if I arrive at an answer, what's then? What then?
Good question.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thought. You know, one of the things that I find so appealing about, I guess, the Christian story is the end game that it paints, because it's in the final scenes of the book of Revelation, or in the prophetic content that Jesus gives, or from the apostles, there is this window into a world where God will come to dwell with us on earth. And it's not now some disembodied existence, or you just hit autopilot and just go into some sort of pleasure seeking mode, but that there is meaningful agency for us to continue on into the new world. We're still finite creatures. We don't instantly become infinite knowing everything. And we're meant to work alongside Jesus, who will be the grand king seated on a throne, but we co-rule with him as gardeners and governors of God's future world. And you think of the kind of wisdom and attributes and knowledge and all of those meaningful things that someone who you would want to hold high political office should hold. Yeah. And that's what we're meant to be growing into as Christians. And so even the way God has chosen to make himself known in creation or in history, or the way in which he interacts with us, it's not to answer meticulously every single question that we may have. It's to give us so much of the raw materials of his existence, of that invitation to know him, but then to wrestle forward to become wise, mature agents who follow Jesus. And that was kind of the, I guess, invitation of the book, was to recognize this is a grand adventure. I do think God has made himself known in Jesus. I do think those fixed realities have been made known so that you can respond in and experience a relationship with God. But he doesn't answer all of those mysteries exhaustively, because so much of the wrestle is actually how we forge the necessary virtues and skills that will help us to fulfill our role in the new creation. So I think there's an element of both of those in there.
Can I just interrupt for a moment? We're going to go to a quick break. Time is flying by already.
Sure.
And I want to come back and maybe pick up the question of suffering, because that's been mentioned in both of your stories in the introductions, Dean and Dan. And it is, for many people, simply the issue that stops them ultimately from walking potentially down the road towards embracing Christianity. So it'd be interesting to go there as we continue this conversation, asking, could the story of Christianity really be true? Dean's been asking himself that. Dan is encouraging people to ask that in his new book, Questioning Christianity. We'll be back in just a moment.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Could the story of Christianity really be true? We're asking on the show today. I'm joined by Dan Patterson and Dean Mays. They're both Aussies. Dan is the founder of Questioning Christianity and co-author of the book of the same name. And Dean Mays is returning to the show. He's become a listener in recent years. He's kind of on a questioning journey himself around faith, philosophy, Christianity. And so I just thought it would be fun to get you guys together and to just have an open-ended conversation on this. I should have asked this earlier, really, Dean, but you know, when it came to the book, how did you find it? How did you kind of process it? Did it kind of touch on issues that you found were relevant to the questions you're asking and so on?
Oh, it did. It certainly did. And I don't know if I've said it already, but I have to congratulate Dan on the book. I think what he's produced is a really admirable publication. It's something that you can sit down with and, like I was saying before, wrestle with, you know. And I was saying, the way the book's set out is that there's, you know, part one is the introduction, part two is the invitation, and then part three is the questions. Well, I, and I think a lot of readers have probably done this, I jumped straight to part three, and went straight into the questions and then came back to part two. I found part three the most stimulating portion of the book. It's courageous of Dan to be so willing to present the questions that people have, like me, who have struggled with Christianity for such a long time. And it's something that I've not seen much of before I came to, say, Unbelievable, the show. So
I really appreciate that, mate.
And
thanks
just to
for
give
that.
You a sure. sense of some of those questions that come up in part three of the book, you know, how could a good God allow suffering? Why isn't God more obvious? Has science disproved God? Can I trust the Bible? Did Jesus really rise from the dead? How can God be good when the church is so bad? All super relevant questions, and the kind of thing we could do a show on each of them with Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
And I mean, we designed the book really to try and be that sort of choose your own adventure. And so in the first part, to spell out the Christian story and simply tie together the various parts of the Bible into the coherent narrative that emerges and that points to Jesus. But then recognizing that in response to that narrative, people have all those sorts of questions. And so we naturally wanted to give space and room for people to ask, what place does doubt have in a developing faith? Am I allowed to ask these questions, and does the Christian story have the resources to respond to them? So I really appreciate that warm encouragement, mate.
What about the way you've sort of come to approach the issue of suffering specifically then, Dean? As I say, this has been something you've been familiar with in your own life. If you've had this particular issue with your back for, you know, many years, did that for you, obviously, initially, and the experience of your family as well growing up, obviously you've kind of turned your back on God to some extent. Has anything, what's changed that you're now open to the idea of a God, even in a world where there's still evidently just as much potential for suffering around you?
Well, I have to say at the outset that this is all your fault, Justin. I blame you.
What an endorsement.
Look, if I was to sort of go back over, well, I will. I'll go back over my life now. Part of the reason I became a nurse was because I witnessed the work of the nurses and doctors that looked after both my brother and myself. And I think that it became very clear to me in my mid to late teens that I was going to head towards nursing as a career, because I wanted to give back, I think, to this incredible profession that enabled me to get up and walk again after what I went through. And so I didn't. So I entered nursing and kind of not, I just carried through with it for the first probably 10 to 15 years. But I didn't really start to see the importance of it until I started nursing in intensive care. Because that was where I saw probably the most acute suffering, and the most transformative experiences as a nurse. And once I sort of began my journey in that particular area of nursing, that was when I started to assign a greater sense of meaning to what I was doing, if that makes sense. And so now, what I do, I treat with a great sense of, or assign a great sense of importance to it, and care to it. So, you know, I try to nurse in a very... I throw everything of myself into it. So
sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to that extent, has that experience changed the way you perceive suffering then in some way? Because obviously the reality is, you know, the most natural question that most people ask when they're faced with suffering and they're given the claim that there is a God who loves them is, well, how do you reconcile those two things? And maybe there isn't an obvious answer. But what has fallen into place that's made you kind of feel more open to that as you've gone through this experience of seeing suffering, but also the transformative effects of those who care for and, you know, walk alongside people in suffering, Dean?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll give you a couple of examples that just came to me just now. So I worked for a long time in neonatal intensive care. So I was looking after premature babies, you know, some of whom were born into the most precarious medical and health circumstances that you could imagine. And there was a lot of tragedy in that. And I saw a lot and experienced a lot. But tonight, as I'm sitting here talking to you, my 15-year-old son is actually at the test match in Adelaide with a good mate of his who I actually nursed as a premature baby.
Wow.
And so I've had the pleasure of reconnecting with not only him, the patient that I looked after as a baby, but his mum and dad, who I know quite well. And to see him thrive and flourish the way he has, you know, and to know that, you know, he's at the cricket with my son, you know, that fills me with something. Really, you know, that, you know, it fills me with a sense of pride, sense of, you know, happiness, which, you know, where does that come from? So, you know,
yeah,
it doesn't come from nowhere.
I suppose it's that old the thing of, you know, you've got a problem of evil, but you've also got a problem of good, in a sense that you've got this kind of this fact that we do sense that there are things that are really good in the world, that there are, you know, things to be celebrated, things that give us meaning and purpose and so on. Where do you want to take this, Dan? Just be interested in your response to some of these, you know, this experience that Dean has had.
Yeah, mate, I really appreciate that insight. And, you know, to know that the boys are at the cricket watching the UK team get absolutely dominated again is just really warming while we're in this conversation with Justin.
Yeah, yeah.
But I reckon the hardest place I've ever had to speak to the theme of suffering was to a medical staff at a hospital up in Singapore, because it's one thing to speak to people's individual and personal experience, and it's another thing to make sense of these questions in light of those who wade in intense suffering day in, day out so often that they become numb to it in many cases. And so I really just appreciate your honesty, and more than that, I appreciate what you did. Someone like you sat beside my mum's bed for weeks and weeks and weeks and nursed her through those really dark times. So thank you for what you do. But I think you're also touching on that there are these depths to human experience, that if we want to take God out of the picture, which at face value may answer the intellectual problem of suffering posed by Epicurus and all skeptics since him, it does get rid of that one problem, namely the Christian contradiction of an all-powerful and all-loving God with what we see in the world. But you bump into an entirely new problem, which is the evilness of evil and the wrongness of suffering. Because on the naturalist story, it's very hard to account for the evilness of evil, that this isn't just a sliding scale with time and culture and evolutionary psychology and sociological groups, but that some things really are evil, but also the wrongness of suffering. I remember seeing Mum when you walked into that ICU, there were six beds in there, and I couldn't tell because of the bandages and the bruising which one of those six ladies was Mum. And there was something that felt so percussive and painful about that experience. And then when you see Stephen Fry rightly say, "What's up with bone cancer in children?" You know, as he's decrying suffering before God, it makes sense, because it feels wrong to us. But ejecting God from the world story only takes away the wrongness of suffering as well, because on naturalism, it's just how things have always been, how they're meant to be. There's no other ought to the system. And yet the Christian story, to me, it actually answers beautifully that deep intuition that this is not the way that things should be, that something has gone wrong in how human beings are experiencing the world as God intended for us to. And I recognize, like, in coming at these questions, we are scratching at the surface on something that is unbelievably deep. But, I mean, the question for suffering for me is a really pragmatic one. You can go 10 rounds on the different kinds of theodicies to make sense of moral evil or natural suffering and all the different approaches or resources that the Christian story and thinkers give to us. But I think the pragmatic ultimatum is one that's powerful for me. And if it comes down to facing suffering in a world where there is no hope, that death really does rob us of any ultimate hope, and where suffering gets the last word, and where there's no ultimate meaning to our suffering, it's meant to be avoided in order to maximize pleasure and minimize pain. Well, then I would much rather suffer with Jesus than suffer without him. Like, you consider what's different if the Christian story is true and the way in which Jesus reveals God's reaction towards the pain and suffering of this world. And like at Lazarus's tomb, he weeps over those who are grieving. He is moved by compassion. You see him confronting death and evil and injustice and sickness as enemies of humanity, or as not the way that things should be. You see him restoring meaning to our suffering. You know, this big providential view that even though he may not be the ultimate cause behind it, still God permits suffering to be a forge to develop us towards, like you were saying, wrestling to become something greater, to move towards something greater on the other side. And then there is that beautiful and final hope in the Christian story of resurrection to eternal life, that this suffering ultimately gives way to having our tears wiped away and a future with God in a world where there is no more suffering, sickness, crying, or death or pain anymore. So all of that, I guess the resources that the Christian story gives, not only to make sense of some of the depth of feelings that you have, the dignity of human beings, that suffering, you can nurse people through it to the other side. These are meaningful acts, but also then just the hope to extend to sufferers and the comfort that comes from having a grieving and scarred God who will be with them. I can't imagine wanting to rob people of that hope. And this is pragmatic argument, doesn't make Christianity true, but it means that whilst I understand that maybe initial intuition to run away from God, I think the more I've had to face suffering from friends right around the world at different stages of life and come to terms with how dark the world can be, the more I hope the light of the Christian story is true and am warmed by the evidence that seems to make it, if nothing else, at least a rational belief, if not the most rational belief. So I don't know if any of the resources of the Christian story have appealed to you, or Jesus's reactions to suffering. What have you made of those in your own sort of wrestling with Christianity?
I take your point about the story of Lazarus. That one is quite a profound one for me, because it humanizes Jesus quite a bit, and God to an extent too. I think for me, God is so far outside our ability to conceptualize. I think that to try and humanize him brings him up short, if that makes sense. I'm asking a lot of questions here, but yeah.
What do you mean by that? Just to explain, Dean, so you find to humanize God is to sell the kind of mystery of God a bit short? What's the point you were making there?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that God is so far beyond our ability to understand. I mean, outside of the gospel, I think that, you know, he's obviously brought Jesus to dwell amongst humanity for the time that he did, as an example of who he is. But I think God he's outside of our understanding.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly different, I guess, philosophical scaffoldings for trying to make sense of what God is like. And I think one of the things that is, I guess, fascinating to me from the Christian story, many of the arguments for God's existence argue for this broadly theistic concept. But the Christian story seems to have a very personal nature to what God is like. He reveals himself in starkly personal terms. In fact, he is himself tripersonal, you know, one being and three divine persons, Father, Son, and Spirit. And, you know, as I was wrestling with this question of suffering, reading the Gospels, you know, as a 17, 18-year-old, I couldn't understand why a loving God would let bad things happen. That was the grid with which I was first reading these stories. And then when you see Jesus to Philip in John 14 say, "Philip, if you've seen me, you have seen the Father. I and the Father are one." That this claim that Jesus is this window into getting to see exactly what God is like. We don't have exhaustive knowledge. We're only ever taking in, to borrow Boreham's terms, a slice of infinity. But there is real true knowledge, I guess, of what God is like when we look at Jesus. We're not seeing a shadow. We're not seeing a misrepresentation or purely an anthropomorphism. That what is true of Jesus is more true of God in terms of the love and compassion with which he moves towards us sufferers. And so I totally get the mystery element. I mean, that's one other aspect of suffering, the sort of skeptical theism, as high as the heavens are above the earth, so far are God's thoughts above our thoughts. But there is also some aspect in the Christian story of that mystery being unveiled or made known to us in the incarnation of Jesus. But yes, are you going to say something?
Let me come at this from another angle with regards to suffering. So I mentioned before the example of the positive experience that I had with a patient. So about 5 years ago, I nursed a young woman in her early to middle 30s who was diagnosed with a really aggressive brain tumor. And now she went through multiple surgeries to try and get on top of this aggressive tumor, but look, it was a failing enterprise. The tumor was far too aggressive. It just totally overcame her, and she fought that thing for months, up to a year, I think, and she was in and out of our unit. You know, multiple times she'd go to the ward, she'd have more surgery, she'd come back to us. And during that period of time, you know, our unit was it's a fairly small unit, so we bonded with her, we bonded with her husband, her two daughters, and we kind of welcomed her into our family as such, as she battled this thing. But in the end, the tumor overcame her, and look, she died. And it wasn't a pleasant death. It was a fairly brutal death, and that knocked a lot of us around, because we'd looked after her for so long, and you know, we'd had hoped for her, and so in the aftermath of that, you know, I was sort of left sitting down and trying to understand why this would happen, and I still do that, you know. I still do that. And then, look, preparing for this conversation this week and reading your book, Dan, I actually came back to a passage in The Brothers Karamazov, and Ivan Karamazov was talking with his brother Alyosha. And so Alyosha is this young idealistic priest. His brother Ivan is this sort of cold and not calculating, but he's very intellectual. He's very, he's wrestling with a sort of the moral landscape that he sees. And he rails, he's like Stephen Fry, he rails against this idea of why would God cause suffering, right? And it's a question that this Ivan wrestles with, and he doesn't ever resolve it. And in fact, it becomes so debilitating to him, he falls into a state of madness by the end of that novel, right? And that really resonated with me, that I think if we wrestle with this idea of suffering too much, it can destroy us. And so for me, the only way that I can reconcile myself with the idea of suffering is that I have to I have to push on, you know, push on as a clinician, and you know, apply everything that I've learned about the previous experience with the woman that I just mentioned, and put that into the care and attention that I give to patients going forward. And look, last night I was at work, and we've got another patient who has got an aggressive brain tumor, who had been operated on. And, you know, there again, it's going to be the same thing. Well, pragmatically, I'm going to apply myself to the care and attention of, for that patient, and go on, because that's what I have to do. Because otherwise, it's a descent into madness.
Yeah.
I definitely hear that. And the last thing you would want anyone to walk away with is the impression that the Christian story answers all of the why questions, or that I can look back now, even with retrospect from 25 years, and say, this is why God allowed a car accident to happen that day, why he didn't miraculously intervene to stop it. We just don't have access to those sorts of answers. And I get the pursuit of the individual why, that can sometimes just make you so neurotic in that search. You just don't know. What I think the Christian story does do is it paints broadly the way that the system is set up, and how the system itself is at odds with its design plan, that things are not now as they should be, that the world is under a curse, so to speak, or that it groans as under labor pains. And it gives us incredibly visceral experiences through the stories of Job, or the laments in the Psalms, or so much of the crushing experience of people with whom Jesus was interacting, who suffered and suffered long, and not just the pain, but the alienation of their community. And what it does is say that somehow in the midst of all of this, that there is a God who is not distant, but who bears the scars of the suffering of this world himself now, and perhaps for all eternity, if we read the book of Revelation and find a lamb there as though it had been slain, or Jesus' resurrection body with those scars. And so I think, you know, Ivan's search was for the philosophy, but Alyosha, that pragmatic leaning into what he knows to be true of God because he's made himself known in Jesus, and the hope that that imbues you with, that despite the darkness now, despite the pain, despite the questions, that one day that there will be some kind of dawn. And I don't mean to sound overly romantic with that, or to downplay, but to hit eject on that hope, I think, would make me cocoon up my heart, because I don't know how you can keep caring for people if you're not convinced, you know, at the end of the day, that there is a love greater than your own that carries and bears them up if they're just disappearing into oblivion. So for me, the Christian story really is a lifeline for how to hold up in this pain. And it's interesting to me how often these questions about suffering are posed from a place predominantly of comfort, looking in on pain, and not necessarily from those who are in pain themselves, who are crying out for hope or for something more. And you know, if the Christian story is true, which try and spell out some of the reasons that led me to that conviction in the book, you know, then I really do think we have good reason to cling on to it, and especially when things are really tough.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, to the Brothers Karamazov, I mean, is obviously a fictional metaphor for this. It's a profoundly significant metaphor, but it's something that I have applied, or tried to apply, in my own life, with regards to, you know, wrestling with suffering. And, you know, at the end of the day, I have to push on and lean into the duty that I've taken on. Because, I mean, suffering's not going to stop, because if I stop. But if I can, you know, kind of contribute to alleviating that suffering, then that to me is, that means a lot to me. And that I think
yeah,
that,
and I can understand.
And
why.
I think that sense comes from something greater than me, and I'm not willing to reject out of hand, the Christian influence that comes to play or comes to bear in that. Yeah. So, yeah. Mm. Justin, you were saying something. I remember reading your book, Unbelievable, and you were relating an experience with one of your children who was in the NICU.
Yeah. That's I open, I think, the chapter where I try to deal with the issue of suffering, albeit briefly, as it always is when you're just writing one chapter on a book. But and I just tried to give the analogy that it is very hard from our limited circumstance to understand the bigger picture that God sees. Mm. And the example I gave was when our son Jeremy was born, he had a skin infection, and that was discovered, you know, sort of 12 hours or so after he was born. And it meant he had to be put into the intensive care unit and sort of had to be given the antibiotics. And so this, you know, barely born little child, I had to stand there and watch the doctor trying to find the vein to get the needle in. And I was given the job of just giving him these little drops of sugar, you know, from the pet.
Yeah.
And to try and keep him calm, you know. And it just struck me, you know, I wish I could somehow communicate to this baby that the doctor isn't trying to hurt them, trying to do something horrible to them. Mm. It's for their good. And very often, you know, for me, you know, on a much bigger scale, we in our situation cannot see that bigger picture of what God might be doing through our story, through in all kinds of different ways. Now that can sound trite, even using an analogy like that, because I don't want to say that, oh, you know, well, God's got a purpose behind every sort of horrible thing that happens. I'm not saying that's the way to look at life, but I do nevertheless believe that the Christian story is about a God who redeems everything ultimately, and we will see an answer to everything. But for me, part of faith is kind of that's the challenge of faith, is to trust that is happening even when you cannot see how that could possibly be the case. I guess that would be my input on that one.
I use a relatively like unholy analogy, if I could put it this way, and we've had our own experiences with inoculation that I think work. But in the Avengers series, I'm not sure if you're Marvel fans at all, but there's this interesting scene in the movie Infinity Wars, and spoiler alert for anyone who's not seen the film before, but where Doctor Strange is exploring those 14 million possible alternative futures based on the complex web of cause and effect of individual choices right throughout the universe to see in how many of these possible futures they can beat Thanos or overcome death. And it ends up with him choosing a course of action that is very strange to everyone else, because he ends up handing over the Time Stone, and half of the world's population gets clicked out of existence, and 5 years of awful suffering follows, of people feeling lost and empty and confused. And it's not until the Avengers team up, travel through time, and manage to reverse these things in this new future to bring back everyone that was lost. But 5 years later, you've got this great theme of resurrection and a victory over death. And there's so many parallels to the Christian story, but it's that window, I think, that Doctor Strange gives into the complex nature of governing a universe full of free agents and the cause and effect structure webs, and where you meddle with one thing, it could have unintended consequences in a whole realm of ways. And because we don't have full knowledge of everything right now, and certainly not the ability to look through the corridors of time, only God is in a position to really know that ultimate sort of why question. And it can look dark and bleak at all times for us along that storyline. But really,
before you come back, Dean, we're going to go to a quick break, and we'll have our final thoughts as we start to wrap up today's show. Sure. I don't want to interrupt the flow, though, because this is a really interesting conversation, and we'll talk more about Thanos and Marvel, I'm sure, in a moment. Coming back in just a moment, we're doing an open-ended conversation today, talking about issues around suffering, real life experiences of my guests Dan Patterson and Dean Mays, as we look at Dan's new book, Questioning Christianity. You're listening to Unbelievable. We'll be back in just a moment.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's edition of Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley. And if you are listening via podcast, do rate and review us. It helps other people to discover the show. And we'll be hearing some of your feedback to the show in a short moment's time after we've finished our conversation between Dean and Dan. Coming up later on tonight on The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio, the Archbishop of York, Stephen Cottrell, talks to Sam Hales about his life, faith and vision for the Church of England. And next week here on Unbelievable, do extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence? It's a maxim often used by sceptics, but we'll be testing it in a conversation on the evidence for Christianity between atheist blogger Jonathan Pierce and Christian thinker Jonathan McClatchy, who's behind a new web initiative, by the way, called talkaboutdoubts.com, which you'll find out about on next week's show as well. That's Unbelievable next week on the show. For now, let's get back into the final part of this week's discussion. So we've been talking about issues around especially suffering and how we put things together. Dean Mays has been sharing his story as someone who has worked in intensive care units for much of his adult life. Dean is also a very accomplished author and novelist, I should say, and I will link to his website, which is deanfromaustralia.com, from today's show. Go and check out his books.
Great domain.
And it is... I've really enjoyed reading some of your work as well, Dean, so I can attest to what a talented Justin. Writer you are. As well as obviously a very committed nurse. Dan Patterson's book, Questioning Christianity, also linked from today's show, questioningchristianity.com for Dan's website. Dean, I had to break in on something you were about to say in response to Dan talking about, you know, the fact that Marvel film just gives a sense of the way in which, you know, yes, it is so, you know, if you're a God in charge of a universe full of free agents, goodness knows how you make everything join up in the end. But it gives you a sense that things are never simple in that way. And you wanted to say something in response.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was going to ask Dan, would you want that responsibility, you know, of governing a universe?
Personally, no, because I think I would do a terrible job. I think Jim Carrey probably did better in Bruce Almighty than I would if I was given those sorts of powers. But it does speak both to, I think, the category difference between God as creator and me as creation. His infinite wisdom, his omnibenevolence, you know, all of these elements that make him so different to what I am, that he's the only one with the skills able then to govern the universe in a way that in the end we'll look back on and maybe say, wow, if not, you know, that was the best possible way to get to the future that he's creating. So yeah, definitely not the job that I'm hunting for. My CV comes up short.
I was going to ask Dean, as we start to draw this together, and it's just been such an interesting conversation. I really have appreciated the personal sort of stories you've both brought into the conversation.
Thank you. Yeah.
But what you said earlier, Dean, that sometimes you wonder whether, you know, you want to even arrive at the answers, you know, is maybe, you know, you're quite happy with having the questions there. I mean, do you feel though, like, I mean, what would it take, I suppose, to bring you to a place where you kind of felt you could, I don't know, embrace, you know, the claims of Christianity? What do you feel is lacking? What maybe are the questions that haven't yet been resolved, or that you feel would, you know, could bring you to a place where you were able to say, you know what, I think this story does make sense of the big story?
Oh, look, Justin, I want to say that intellectually I'm kind of there, but there's something missing. There's a spiritual and an emotional ingredient that I'm searching for. And look, now you've had that moment where you arrived at this. You had an oh wow moment, Justin, didn't you? I think you recalled that in your book, and Dan, I'm sure you've come to that yourself.
Similar. Yeah.
Sitting here right now, I don't think I've had that. I haven't had that moment that's said, "Yep, this is definitely true," and yet intellectually, so much of it makes sense to me. You know, look, my bookshelf over the last couple of years has expanded, you know, out of sight with, you know, the works of Tom Wright. You know, I'm working through A.C. Grayling's book on philosophy at the moment. Dan, I've really enjoyed reading your book. I crave this stuff now, you know. You know, I'm exploring the work of Camus. I'm not willing to, you know, I mean, a lot of people would say that he kind of dismisses the notion of God, but I don't think he does, you know. Just from what I've read. So intellectually I'm there. Spiritually and emotionally, I need something else, and I don't know what that is. And I wrestle with that.
That's super interesting.
I wrestle with that every single day.
I wonder if there's something in the resources of what Blaise Pascal offered with his wager, because many people look at something like, you know, the Pascal's wager, and they assume it's something of a quasi argument for the existence of God. But I think the way it's sort of been reformulated more recently is the idea of maybe just a reason, a little bit like even Jordan Peterson's encouragement to almost try on the belief that God is real, to live as though God is real. And there are a host, and this is really part two of the book, you know, in response to the Christian story, that invitation to respond to Jesus, that trying on of perhaps the spiritual disciplines and the spiritual habits of being a Christian, of wondering, maybe I will spend a little bit more time reflecting on the teachings of Jesus. In addition to Camus and to A.C. Grayling, why not we try Jesus in his life philosophy as well? Or it might be spending some time opening up and saying, God, if there is something, if you're real, would you reveal yourself to me or make yourself known so I could have that similar experience that Christians seem to speak about? Or even, you know, many people would pragmatically lean towards, why not spend time with some kind of Christian community to be in the places where God has said that he makes himself known in his people and in his story. And they might just be some small little steps without having to necessarily commit to believing or to faking till you make it or something like that, but just putting yourself in the place where perhaps God might reach out and speak in that way.
I that's a good point about faking it. I don't ever want to do that, because I think that's disrespectful to the likes of yourself and Justin and so many other people. I don't want to fake it. I've absolutely loved this conversation tonight, you know, and over the last couple of years, I've loved listening to Unbelievable. And maybe there's something in that. You know, in my nursing experiences, you know, there's been so many profound experiences where I've been there for the very best of human nature. You know, and I've been there at the moment of death. Like I actually sat with a Greek Orthodox priest and held his hand, you know, at the last moments of his life. And I mean, he passed with his hand in mine, and he actually blessed me, which I thought, you know, that blew me away. Maybe that's the experience. Maybe those experiences are that that kind of extra ingredient that I'm looking for. I don't know. I'm wrestling with that. I'm wrestling with that. So, and it may not satisfy listeners to this show. You know, I don't know.
I don't know that anyone could say that they are unsatisfied by you simply doing your very best to wrestle with these questions and work them out.
Totally,
Dean. May I say again, I'm humbled that you come on and just share so honestly, you know, where you are at and you know, very honestly, this journey you're at. I mean, in a way, you know, Dan, that middle section of the book is about that invitation. It's about how do you take that step, if you like, into the Christian story, and what would that look like? And everyone's got a different story. Dean's experiences are going to be different from someone else's, but I have run into lots of people like Dean who have said, I've got to a place where this story seems to make intellectual sense to me. What do I do next? And I think I think that is really difficult because you're then very much, you know, I want to say to Dean, go and try a church, but I can't guarantee what kind of people he'll bump into, what kind of version of Christianity he may, you know. As long as someone like you, Dan, are his pastor, that might be brilliant. But, you know, you don't know. And we're all human, and it's a very human institution, ultimately, the church. So what's your advice, Dan, for anyone, not just Dean, kind of feeling like, hey, maybe 2022 is the year when I'm going to, you know, really investigate this, make, you know, maybe try and make some steps forward. And where do you begin in that sense?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's one that is deeply personal and usually hashed out with people hearing more of their story and figuring out that first steps based on where they're comfortable and what they're feeling. But I think anchoring in looking at Jesus, I take the point the church is messy. I know that full well and have experienced that up front in a whole lot of different ways recently. But the joy, I think, of seeing how Jesus himself is different and has different plans for the church, that she would be beautiful and a beacon of hope. And so my encouragement, maybe, Dean, would be, as much as I'm sure we're going to continue this conversation off air, off camera, and when we can finally get into each other's states here in Australia, to really do take a good look at Jesus's personal invitation, because it does get personal. He moves from speaking to crowds to inviting individuals by name to come and follow him. And I love the conversation between Nathaniel and Philip at the beginning of John's gospel, this come and see. And I experience God all the time through the love of his people. Like you said, genuinely nice people, but more than nice, there is a rich generosity and kindness of spirit because they've been touched by something beyond themselves. And so I find, you know, my local church, as messy as it is also a place where I sense God. The Gospels are a great thing to go and read and just to pray your way through the Gospels and say, God, if you are real, Jesus, if you are resurrected, Lord of glory, would you reach out and invite me in the same way? And people like yourself, Dean, I mean, you've got a beautiful openness of spirit and I think a decent mind, you know, to really plumb the depths of philosophy, to ask hard questions of various philosophers. Maybe your story may be a little bit more like that of C.S. Lewis, who's sort of convinced of the reality of this, but then has this powerful experience. You know, you feel the impending or approaching presence of him you desire so eagerly not to meet. Only in your case, you're kind of hoping it's true. Or one of my personal favorites, Blaise Pascal, you know, describes this powerful experience of having interacted with the ideas of Christianity, then experiencing fire for nearly 2 hours from 10:30 until 12:30 in the morning. Maybe that spiritual experience for you is just around the corner. And I think the invitation of Jesus is not to fake anything, but to seek. Keep seeking as you're doing, keep knocking. And that door will be open to you as well if the Christian story is true. So I really, really have loved just kind of hearing where you're at and look forward to hanging out together.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, I'm sure you guys will connect as we've said offline, but it's just been an absolute pleasure to hear both of your stories. Thank you very much for sharing it. Great show to start the year with. As you can probably tell, they recorded a little while ago when England were either triumphing in the Ashes or being beaten to a pulp by Australia, but we'll see.
When it's still legitimate to wear a Christmas jumper like
exactly,
that, hey, Justin?
Yeah. Anywho, it's great to have you both on the show. Thank you so much, Dean and Dan, for joining me today.
Thanks very much, Justin.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Dan.
Looking forward to hearing your feedback to today's show. You can email me unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Get in touch via our social media sites as well. Facebook.com/premierunbelievable is a good place to go. You can also find me on Twitter @unbelievablejb, on TikTok and Instagram as well as justin.briley. But we will be launching the show on a new footing on several of those platforms as well in the coming months, so look out for that as well. It's been great to see some of our content really flying on social media and on YouTube. Over Christmas, you may remember we spoke with Peter Byram, our newest face here at Unbelievable, helping me to do all things Unbelievable related, and he told us his own story of journeying from atheism to Christianity via Richard Dawkins. That's had a lot of views on our YouTube channel and also a lot of views on our Facebook page as well, where we put a clip of that up. And a clip of Tom Holland talking about crucifixions, ISIS crucifixions of the Yazidis and Christians from that lecture as well. A lot of people sharing that, commenting on it. So thanks for all who are engaging on the social media side. Great to hear from a few show listeners over the New Year period. Zach got in touch to say thanks for what you and your team and those around you do in facilitating deep conversations on faith. It's helped me realize some of my shortcomings in study. It strengthened my faith and facilitated further conversations between myself and those around me. Praying for you and yours. Zach, I love hearing that. That's exactly what the show is here to do, help people to have better conversations. Elizabeth gets in touch to say, just a note to say thank you for the thoughtful podcasts. I'm currently, and have been for the past 7 years, struggling with my faith. The people you interview provide great food for thought, and it's good to listen to people of other faiths and no faith at all. Although I can't imagine ever going back to the old evangelical substitutionary atonement and hell beliefs of my past, I really hope to be able to rekindle some sort of faith. For me to go forward with no belief at all leaves me full of despair. Best wishes to you and your family. Elizabeth, thank you again. The show very much exists for people like yourself, people who are struggling with faith, people without any faith, people who maybe, you know, are pretty confident in their faith, but want to know how to engage that faith better with others. It's a whole spectrum of people who listen to the show. Daniel gets in touch to say, Happy New Year, Justin. I hope you had a great Christmas and have a great 2022. I'm from Australia, but I live in Egypt with my wife. She's Egyptian, and our children. Just want to reach out and say, love the work you do with Unbelievable. It's been a great blessing. My family is English and Irish, and it's nice to see British theological and cultural content in a space that is heavily dominated by America. It looks like you thoroughly enjoy being between your guests during a great debate. It must be thrilling. I'm new to Anglicanism after previously being a Pentecostal, currently studying for a Bachelor of Theology at St. Mark's, Canberra, and would love to do a Master's in Oxford or Cambridge. I'm also writing a novel and would love to see a Christian resurgence in the arts. Looking forward to more Unbelievable content in this year. Thank you, Daniel. Lovely to hear that. You're listening out in Egypt, and sounds like you've got some exciting things on your plate as you study for your Bachelor's of Theology and write a novel. Yes, we do need a resurgence in the arts. I think that is probably the most important place, in all honesty, to put our efforts right now. There's a lot of good apologetic content out there, but we need to stir people's imagination as well. We need to be left and right hemisphere people, don't we, when it comes to this stuff? Rick gets in touch to say, you only recently found the podcast and really like it. Thank you. You've only listened to 2 episodes so far, you say, Rick. One on C.S. Lewis with a Lewis scholar debating an atheist, and our recent Calvinism versus Molinism debate. You say, before I start on about that, let me just say that it's a thrill finding such a good Christian debate taking place in the UK. We in America are under the impression that the UK and Europe as a whole have completely dismissed Christianity. Very glad to see that's not the case, and that a podcast such as yours can have a thriving audience. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much, Rick. Anyway, back to the topic at hand. You want to talk about that Molinism and Calvinism debate between Bill Craig and James White. You say, I think I learned and unlearned quite a bit about Molinism and Calvinism. I was a little worried at first that this was all about intellectual gymnastics, but it became clear that both your guests are disciples and friends of our Lord Jesus Christ. Problem I have is that the issue between them seems to be whether God simply knows everything that happens or predestines it to happen. They both seem to be saying that God either decides what to do after an action occurs or has already predestined the action and the response beforehand. I was encouraged that both mentioned the timelessness of God, but neither seems to take that into account. They seem to be discussing a God who is bound by time, as is his creation, when in fact time is also his creation. Therefore, he exists both within it and without it or outside of it. I don't know which theological discipline my belief on the matter falls into, but I believe that God knows what's going to happen because he's already seen it, and that he's continually seeing it all the time. And I can imagine a God who, during the Peloponnesian Wars, was also thinking about how many years, days and hours it was until my daughter was killed in an accident. This would be an example of how vast his mind is compared to ours, that he could show the Apostle John the end of the world, which obviously was going to take place at least 2,000 years in the future, if not many more. Anyway, those are my thoughts on the matter, likely worth the paper they're not printed on. Any, again, keep up the good work and witness. Thank you, Rick, who signs off as a curious layman. Always welcome all thoughts, whether you think they're tutored or not. I enjoy engaging with them. A lot of people very complimentary about the lecture we broadcast from Tom Holland for Open Doors on Christianity, persecution, and the cross.
That was our final show of the last year. And here's CJ, who says, the best video for the beginning of the new year. Tom Holland tells how Western civilization is deeply rooted in Judeo-Christianity. Thank you very much for getting in touch. Josh Warburg tweeted, great lecture. I really appreciated Dominion, listened on Audible, and now see so many ways that secular and Western values are inextricably linked with Christianity and the idea of Christendom. Thank you for bringing this to a wider audience. Someone got in touch as well on email. Jonathan says, Tom Holland's talk at Open Doors was brilliant and deeply challenging. I especially appreciated his point that we allow our minds to intellectualize or romanticize a thing, person, or time in history, to the point that we become comfortably numb to the reality of the awfulness and evil of the thing, person, or time in history. Thanks again to the team for all the work and prayer that goes into providing content that's fruitful. Blessings for the new year. Thank you, Jonathan. Blessings on you as well. And Ruth Gervat says, Happy New Year, Justin. Love the podcast and all the effort put into it. In a recent one, you mentioned events at the US Capitol on January the 6th last year and called them an insurrection. Please don't use that term. It was not an insurrection. The protesters were not carrying arms and had no intention of overthrowing the government. The whole thing got very out of hand, but that did not make it an organized overthrow of the government. In fact, it was pitifully unorganized, which is why it got so messy. And you've linked me to some facts about that. You say, I know it's difficult for you on the other side of the ocean to understand Americans with our way of doing government that's different from yours. We do not do politics politely like you do. Well, it's not always polite at our end either, Ruth, but thank you for that correction. Perhaps it was the wrong term to use for what happened a year ago. Joel Hogan also got in touch to say essentially the same thing. So thanks for those who have pulled me up on that one. That was among the most popular shows that I was listing on last week's program from 2021. Ali gets in touch to say thanks for the podcast. It's been an amazing resource for me as a stay-at-home mum who has a passion for apologetics but no ability to go to seminary whilst in the midst of toddlerhood. I just listened to the Ex-Christian Dialogue episode, which was a classic replay. You say, so good. I have a friend whose story of deconstruction is quite similar to Rebecca's on the show. It's been heartbreaking to watch, but I do entrust her to the Lord. I'm wondering if you're still in touch with Rebecca. Do you have an update on where she is today in her beliefs and thinking? Well, I can say, Ali, I haven't particularly been in touch with Rebecca, though. We follow each other on Twitter and that kind of thing. And I saw she acknowledged the when we put out the new show as a bit of a throwback to the past. Don't honestly know where she's at. It would be interesting to do a catch up possibly with Rebecca at some point. But I'm glad you enjoyed the show. And thanks to all others who have been getting in touch over the past couple of weeks. Lots of good stuff here. I'll just read one more email that came in regards to the show with Kelly Capick and Alan Noble. We were talking about how to be human in an inhuman world. Here's a couple of the comments that came in on that. Laura McCowan said, this was a great chat. Alan's book is on my wish list, but I'm going to have to add Kelly's too. Lots to take away. Even the way we look at our identity in Christ, it can even sometimes become legalistic. Autonomy is impossible is also something to ponder. And Luke Hemphill got in touch to say, I'm a little late with this feedback, but wanted to let you know that I thought that conversation with Alan Noble and Kelly Capick was one of the best discussions you've ever had. The three of you touched on multiple themes and topics that resonated with me and are relevant for the cultural moment we find ourselves in. Thank you for hosting this conversation, and I look forward to new content in 2022. Well, there's plenty of that coming, Luke. Thank you for being part of the Unbelievable family. Thank you for listening, wherever you're listening in the world or via Premier Christian Radio. Just a reminder that The Profile is coming up shortly with Archbishop Stephen Cottrell. It's also available on its own Profile podcast. And you can get more podcasts from Premier Unbelievable if you search them up. C.S. Lewis podcast with Alistair McGrath, the Ask NT Write Anything podcast, and we'll be adding more to the roster in the coming year. So watch this space as we launch soon a new mini site giving you all of the resources that we're bringing you now from Premier Unbelievable. But for now, thanks for being with us, and let me tell you what's coming up next week. Do extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence? That's a maxim often used by skeptics, and one we'll be talking about. The evidence for Christianity Is it an extraordinary claim requiring extraordinary evidence? Atheist blogger Jonathan Pierce and Christian thinker Jonathan McClatchy will be joining me. So look out for that, same time next week. Until then, have a good week.